Everything is live about it. You can lock in your commodity prices, all your inputs, and all those things can be done. We got to have connectivity in rural Iowa.
Welcome to episode 232 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. In Osage, Iowa, the community's electric utility has served the town and some of the rural areas around it for about 125 years. Osage Municipal Utilities also offers natural gas services and invested in its own communication system in the early 2000s. They offer telephone, cable TV, and internet connectivity via their cable network. Clearly, Osage is one of those rural communities that think about the future. In this interview, Christopher speaks with Josh Burns, the general manager of Osage Municipal Utilities, who discusses their long-term plans to bring fiber to the home to the community. Josh, who is also a former state representative, spends some time discussing Iowa's approach to rural connectivity and its investment in the Iowa Communications Network. Now here's Chris talking with Josh Burns, general manager of the Osage Municipal Utilities and a former member of the Iowa House of Representatives.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with Josh Burns, the general manager of Osage Municipal Utilities in Iowa. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you. As I was saying in our pre-interview, I have this memory, and I'm excited to be reminded of this story that you'll be telling us in a few minutes about these cattle prices and an app around how it's important to have internet access out on farms near your community. But let's start with just a little bit of background for people who aren't familiar with Osage. Where are you in Iowa, and what's the community like?
So Osage, Iowa, located, I guess the best way to describe us is we're kind of a North Iowa or Northeast Iowa community. About 3,500 people reside here in Osage. About 30 minutes to the eastern side of Mason City, I guess, and kind of 30 minutes north of Austin, Minnesota. So it kind of gives you an idea that we are definitely a border community between the two states. And, you know, I guess in terms of, you know, what people, a snapshot of what Osage would look like, especially our utility. So our utility is gas, electric, and telecom. And our forefathers had some really good instincts there to add gas and telecom after they had started out with electric. We are known as a very progressive utility. We had a guy by the name of Wes Birdsall that was our general manager years ago, and he was actually world-renowned for all of his energy conservation methods and things that he implemented around the community of Osage, such as hot water blankets and light bulbs and low-flow shower heads and, you know, just things of that nature, kind of put us on the map. And then over the years, we have added a wind turbine to our energy portfolio that we actually own ourselves, about a 1.5 megawatt wind turbine. This summer, we just got done completing a 792 kilowatt community solar farm. And so that's going to allow community members to purchase units or subscribe to units within our community solar farm. So we're a very progressive utility and constantly looking at ways to bring in the newest, the latest, the greatest. And so now here we sit with the next question is, how do we do fiber to the home within the community? We're a very, as you can tell, a very rural-based community in Iowa. And the one thing that you brought up earlier, the story about the cattle app, if you will, we had some young entrepreneurs here in Osage that cattle farmers came from long-standing cattle families. And they said, you know, how can we better use technology to better market cattle? How can we do a better job of purchasing cattle on the front end and making sure that we're actually making money when we purchase these cattle? And so these two younger gentlemen went ahead and developed an app. And then that app, basically, you could sit at a sale barn as you're purchasing cattle, be live to the internet, and as those cattle come across and as the prices are going across, you can plug those prices in, reference it against the commodities at real time, and lock in your prices at the end when you finish out those cattle. So you know while you're sitting in the sale barn, I can either purchase the cattle at X amount of dollar per head and make this amount for money, or I can purchase them here and lose this much per hit. So it's using real live-time data to make those critical decisions so that they have a positive net return on that. The other cool thing about that app is they can actually walk out into the feedlot with their smartphone, their tablets, whatever it may be, and as they're walking through the feedlot, they can do inventory. And up here we have cattle producers that have multiple lots of cattle, and so maybe they forget which one was bought on what date. You can go back in, check that data. This lot here was purchased on this date. This is when they're, you know, going to market. This is when I contracted for. So it's live. I mean, it's everything is live about it. You can lock in your commodity prices, all your inputs, and all those things can be done. Well, how does that tie into what, you know, this conversation is? We got to have connectivity. You know, we absolutely have to have connectivity in rural Iowa for these things.
You know, those things that you described, I admit that they are very interesting and they are important. And it's a reminder that I think, you know, some of the really great breakthroughs and innovation we get comes out of Silicon Valley. But frankly, you know, a lot of the innovation that we ultimately use around this country comes out of communities that we hadn't heard of previously. But it seems like a lot of things that you could do over an LTE network. What makes you, you know, pushing for that fiber to the home, aside from your streak as a, you know, utility that's obviously thinking about the future more than the past?
Right. Well, and I think a couple things. Yes, you can get connected through some of those other entities. I think one, there is definitely some prohibitive costs that are associated with that. I mean, I have a lot of rural folks that come to me. They share with me what their costs are of, you know, once they start burning through the data, what those costs that they're paying for that connectivity out in the rural areas, and that gets to be very prohibitive. Reliability. You know, I think reliability is a big thing for some of these folks, and we tend to have a pretty good track record when it comes to reliability when you talk about my division of telecommunications here at our utility. You know, and the other thing I think that you get is I have techs on site ready to go. If I can't get a tech to you within about 15 to 20 minutes, I would be shocked. And so customer service is a big component of that. So, yes, you have some opportunities to go with some bigger companies and have some of that connectivity, but you don't get the full package like we can provide. And I think that's a big deal. And we have some pockets of our rural communities that are dead zones. I mean, I have dead zones within Mitchell County where people are not having that connectivity, and the bigger companies aren't willing to make the investment to get them connected. And so it's going to take people like myself, it's going to take grassroots efforts to get some of those folks connected. And honestly, in Mitchell County, unfortunately, we have the haves and the have-nots when it comes to connectivity. And that's unfortunate in the sense that our schools are going to be more one-on-one type school systems, and you got a kid that goes home after school to do their homework on their Chromebook or whatever it may be, they can't get connected. And so we have a discrepancy even within our school system of, you know, what kids have this access and which kids don't. And so we really need to level the playing field.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of the telecom for the utility. How did you guys get started with, you know, doing some telecom, and what's the current network that you have today?
I want to say it was mid to late 90s, I believe. They made the commitment to, well, I guess, go into like cable TV and internet and those things. And so it's a coax system, you know, the old, I shouldn't say old, but it's the copper to the home here in town. And so we have got phone, internet, and cable. It's an interesting setup in the sense that our cable feed comes to us from a rural teleco that provides us with our cable feed. So we're kind of at their mercy a little bit as to what our packages look like, which stations we can offer. You know, if they have tiling issues or if they have an outage, we have an outage. I mean, so we're kind of at the mercy of them a little bit, which sometimes can prove to be frustrating and difficult. In terms of like our bandwidth that we're getting in our community, you know, we're getting it from about four different entities, not all of which are the same prices. I mean, it's kind of all over the board. We pay some folks just for transport fees. You know, and we're about, so I think we're about a 1.3 gig community is where we're at right now. But, you know, all these other companies are talking about increasing their bandwidth, we got to take a look at that. You know, as they increase, we got to increase. We got to stay competitive.
For people who aren't familiar, tell me if I got this wrong. When you say a 1.3 gig community, that means that, you know, you make packages available, people subscribe to them, but people are kind of, you know, they have habits, and so you have a general sense of how much connectivity you need. So on any given day, you're pulling about 1.3 gigs. Is that what you meant?
That's kind of about our total package, correct? That's the next phase we're looking at is, you know, how can we take a little bit more control over our destiny when it comes to fiber bandwidth, fiber to the home. You know, how are we going to compete with some of these companies that are maybe starting to do, you know, some of these bigger companies talking about, you know, deploying these wireless systems and trying to get on top of utility poles and things of that nature. And I guess I see some of that as more of like a quick fix type of connectivity for them. And so we have to be ready. You know, we have to have a game plan of how we're going to control that destiny for ourselves. And so that's what we've been researching right now. And we do have a wireless system that we provide to some of our rural customers as well. And so we do dabble in the wireless in addition to what we do within the community.
When you say that, does your electric territory go outside of the city limits?
That is interesting as well because, yes, how they drew these lines back in the day, I have no idea. It's a lot like your school district lines. They just don't make a lot of sense. And so, yes, we do have some little pockets where, you know, we do go outside. And the nice thing is, our neighbors that we have with electricity is a rural electric cooperative, which are great partners of ours. We work very good together. We've at times maybe had to even exchange some territory. They've been great to work with. So it's nice to have a good electric partner next door to you to be able to work with them. It does. It gets to be, my public purpose is the city of Osage. And it does get a little bit interesting when you start talking about things like, you know, where could we go outside the city limits? Because we do have electric territories. Now, in saying that, we also provide, we OMU, provide the phone service. The 713 is our phone number there. Or I should say 732 is, that is way outside of our territory. We're covering a large group of people out in the country with phone services. So, you know, can you go out and cover them with internet or can you not? It just there's a lot of gray area when it comes to that side of the conversation as well.
So you guys are running a telephone exchange that's quite large, a cable network that's smaller, and then also a wireless network as well. Is there anything that you haven't tried to do?
No, I don't think there. I know we're looking into maybe offering like smart home technologies and getting more engaged in that. Again, we're a small community, you know, and people have to drive, you know, 45 minutes, an hour away, or they order it online. You know, if they want, let's say, for example, like a Nest thermostat or the whole Nest system in general, it could be the thermostat, the camera, the smoke detector, all that stuff. Well, it'd be nice if somebody local could help them with that stuff. You know, we're getting younger people that want to do these things, and it'd be nice if we could maybe even offer a service through our telecom division there to help those folks out with just to set up the installation, maybe even the retailer for it. I don't know. It's just some things we're exploring there as well.
Do you have residents and businesses that are pushing you and saying, we really want to get this fiber soon?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the first things, so I came on board here in February, and one of the first things that we did is we just simply used SurveyMonkey. And we went out and sent it out with all of our bills and stuff and surveyed the community on their telecom wants and needs and took that data back and started to analyze it to see what do people want when it comes to technology and connectivity. And you know, not so much, I found it interesting. One of the things that really came back strong, not so much about speeds as much as it was about reliability. The number one thing was we just want reliable service. We want to be able to be connected all the time. We don't want interruptions. We don't want disruptions. And I thought that was interesting. And to me, you know, that says that we need to maybe do a better job with, you know, maybe just on our end. I mean, maintaining the system, maintaining the outside plant and the internal plant, and doing a good job of preventative maintenance so that we don't have those outages. And so I thought that was very interesting. But definitely fiber to the home is a big want out of our community. That is something that nobody seems to give me any objections on.
Well, and I understand that the nature of the technology, there's fewer points of failure. So it is harder to have higher reliability with a coaxial system than it is with a fiber system, according to my understanding.
Mm-hmm, that is correct. And, you know, so right now we've got, you know, we got different nodes. I think we got about 12 nodes around our community. And you know, you got the sweep and balance that you got to do. You got a lot of things that if those practices aren't being done, your system can suddenly get out of sync. And when it gets out of sync, then you start to have a lot of those issues. And, you know, even like the wireless system, you know, we actually bounce off. We have a south water tower and a north water tower. And so we're projecting out to two smaller communities to the north side and the south side. And we're getting interference all the time. I mean, and that's kind of where I'm questioning how reliable some of these wireless systems that they're talking about deploying are going to be, because the interference seems to be one of our biggest issues. And, you know, around here we got a lot of farmers that got a lot of GPS technology. They got a lot of different systems in there with, you know, auto steer and all the different things they've got that can interfere. We've got a couple smaller companies that have moved into our area that are trying to deploy wireless systems. They interfere with our signals. So just, you know, there's a lot of frustration there sometimes when it comes to that. And the other problem we have, I have a river running just outside of Osage, a pretty good sized river, creates a valley. You got trees, you got a change in your geography. Sometimes it's pretty dang hard to hit those people with a wireless system, and it's really hard to bury a cable in the ground when they live on the side of a hill. You know, it's just, there's some challenges there too.
And let's talk about a different kind of challenge. You are finishing up 6 years in the Iowa House. Let's just talk a little bit about that. What's your experience been in terms of broadband discussions in Iowa? And let me just say that I feel like Iowa is a state that has some remarkable networks, despite, I would say, the state doing very little to help.
I'd agree.
Okay, so let's just, you know, give me a sense of...
Absolutely.
Give me a sense of what happens when you talk about broadband in the Iowa legislature.
I don't know that everybody understands it. I don't think that everybody understands how important connectivity is. You know, if some of these folks that are legislators, maybe they're not in education, maybe they're not involved with economic development, they're not involved with things that truly rely on that connectivity, they don't get it. They don't understand the need for it. You know, I think it's ironic in the state of Iowa, we have done a pretty good job of deploying fiber to the home and getting it going, and it had nothing to do with our legislative body. It had everything to do with some of our folks, like our rural telecos, that made the investment themselves, put the stuff in the ground, and just took it on, and just that initiative. And it's not because of anything we did legislatively. We have and did pass some legislation down there that, I guess a great way to describe it was a shell, kind of a shell piece of policy, in the sense that the infrastructure is there, the language is there, and someday, if the money is ever to follow, you will have a mechanism for how to deploy those dollars. So it was legislation that was passed that will help connectivity in the state of Iowa, but there's no money attached to it. And so it really does no good. You know, I mean, people can go around and say, oh, yeah, we did some great things for connectivity and broadband. Well, yeah, you laid some groundwork, but there's no money with it. It does nothing. You know, essentially, it's just a shell. And so that's about as far as the state of Iowa's gotten. Now, I can tell you in the last month, before the election, Governor Branstad was up here in Osage, and he and I had a conversation about connectivity, and I was telling him about our fiber project that we're doing in Osage, and at that time, he was like, all right, we need to get you on a committee, and you need to be helping me out to get this done. Well, now, as of Tuesday, he's the new ambassador to China eventually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where that energy goes now. So,
I'm very sorry to hear that. First of all, he'll be familiar. I mean, he'll be dealing with fiber in China, perhaps because they have hundreds of millions of people connected with fiber networks already. That's interesting. And I don't mean to cut you off, but, My impression watching from afar is that Iowa is a state in which to succeed with broadband, it's really going to depend on rural co-ops, some of the rural independents that are willing to be future thinking, although I think, the independent companies are kind of mixed between those that are just trying to pull everything out that they can and those that really see themselves as wanting to be a part of the future. Munis playing a big role, but definitely not CenturyLink. And when I see the legislation that seems to come through, and I would have even said, until you said that story, I thought Governor Branstad was kind of in the pocket of CenturyLink. It always seemed like the legislature was so focused on what it thought it could do to try and get CenturyLink to do more rather than recognizing the real need for these rural local investments.
Sure. And I think that tune has changed a little bit. I think you hit the nail on the head because I will tell you that there was a couple bills. I was on Ways and Means, and there was a couple bills that dealt with taxing of like outside plant equipment for your rural telcos. And it was crazy, the lobbying efforts on me on behalf of like Mediacom, CenturyLink, AT&T, and those people basically, crying foul and saying, hey, you can't be cutting those guys any sort of breaks. But at the same time, they were already getting the breaks. They didn't want to have the playing field leveled. They wanted to keep this competitive advantage that they had and not level the playing field. And so you're definitely right. They're in Des Moines, those are some big lobbying groups. I mean, the minute you start to open up the dialogue on leveling the playing field or, trying to connect rural America, those guys won't take the initiative to do it themselves, and the minute we start to do things, they step in and somehow find a way to kind of derail the conversation. And so I was too. I was glad to hear Governor Branstad make those comments to me that, wow, this is awesome that you're taking the initiative, that you're doing this yourselves. We need to get you more engaged on this conversation at a state level. So that was good, but now, like I said, I don't know where that conversation goes with him leaving.
This is one of those things in Iowa. This is not a partisan issue, right? I mean, one of the Iowa mainstays, someone that everyone knows, Curtis Dean. He talks about how Steve King, who most of us think of in the U.S. House as being one of the most incendiary right wing, people on the left would call him unreasonable people. He was very much in support of municipal networks while he was in the Iowa legislature, from what Curtis tells me. So, this is an issue that's more about local and whatnot. And I hope that as time goes on, we see that. That more people respect what the local munis have done in this state.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of, you're starting to see that take hold in Iowa. I mean, Cedar Falls Utility has been a leader in this. Waverly is now connected to Cedar Falls Utility and bringing that connectivity to the city of Waverly. We're this spring going to be putting in our 22-mile-long fiber trunk line from the Minnesota border to Osage. I mean, and here's the other helpful thing. The costs are coming down. It's becoming more viable for some of us to do some of these. We could sit around here all day and wait for more stimulus money or more grant money. But at the end of the day, the culture has definitely changed in Washington, D.C. I don't know what kind of dollars. I will say this. I was very impressed with the fact on the night that Trump gave his acceptance speech, he did talk about infrastructure. And in my opinion, when I say we, that connectivity piece and fiber belongs in the infrastructure piece and in the conversation. It's not just roads and bridges and runways and airports and things. It's also broadband that has to be considered part of infrastructure conversations.
Right. And he has said telecom occasionally, including that. I think many of us are concerned that nonetheless his focus on infrastructure by tweaking the tax code may not benefit municipalities and co-ops. But given that rural America is what gave him the presidency, I really hope that we see rural America demanding not to be left in the dark by this administration or Congress, frankly.
Absolutely. And hey, he's a Twitter user. I mean, he needs to be connected when he travels.
Well, let's finish up with one other thing about Iowa, which is that, you know, Iowa was one of these states that very intelligently early on built the ICN, the Iowa Communications Network, making sure that public institutions around the state would have access to high quality backhaul to get their internet delivered to them. Not necessarily to every school, but at least one point in each district. You know, that's my impression of how it works. Now, in recent years, the Iowa legislature has been trying to sell it off, to privatize it, and it's never been available for furthering municipal networks, I think. Can you just tell us a little bit about what's going on with this debate over the ICN?
I think here's how I think. I think some people looked at it, legislatively speaking, as a quick fix. You know, boom, there it is. It's there already. Let's just use that backbone. We can say we got some things done. You know, let's open it up and get it out there. But I think there was also a lot of people that stepped in and said, hey, wait a minute. And you know, I had a lot of folks come to me with these concerns. They're like, have you thought everything through? You know, what are the unintended consequences of selling this off? You know, suddenly you lose control over pricing. You lose control over a lot of different things that you had control over before. And at the end of the day, you know, hey, we know that thing has been awesome for school districts. I mean, it's been great for continuing education. It's been great for distance learning. I mean, there's so many things that have come from that. And I think we just need to be very, very cautious that, you know, we don't dismantle something and take away that tool that these school districts have. And I don't know. Even though I'm leaving the legislative body, you still keep your ear to the ground. You still have a lot of people internally that you talk to. I brought this up the other day to somebody. I said, okay, so now that we've got the trifecta in Iowa, meaning Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican House, do you think they'll go after that again? And nobody seemed to really think it was on anybody's radar. And so I find that kind of interesting. And nobody's really talking about where the ICN is going to go. And I'll be curious to maybe pick Governor Branstad's brain a little bit and see, you know, what are his thoughts on that. And, you know, I don't know that he's going to be doing anything too disruptive before he leaves. And I definitely don't think Kim Reynolds is too interested in selling that off.
What is the problem that's been identified that makes people want to sell it off?
We've had a hard time finding the money to put into, you know, infrastructure funding for broadband and for that connectivity piece. And if suddenly we sell this off and then it creates some more accessibility, you know, in the public sector, a quick fix. You know, it's a quick thing. It's you turn it over and you disperse that connectivity and look what we did. I think that's kind of part of it.
So, but I guess my lack of understanding is it seems to me that you could also just make it open to everyone. And, you know, if this was funded by the Stimulus Act of 2009, the ARRA, then it would have had to be open to all kinds of parties. So is there a reason that the state doesn't just open it up to get those ends without selling it off?
Sure. And I guess I don't even know the answer to that one. It's been, I don't think we even debated much of it last year. I think it's been the last 2 to 3 years is when it was really kind of a hot button topic. So I guess I couldn't even say for sure why they don't go that route.
So, and let's just finish up then with a sense of, you know, why someone like you who takes an interest in this doesn't know that. Is it just insanely overwhelming? What do you have? Like, you have a half of a staff person helping you out as you're trying to shape the future of an entire state?
Absolutely. That is one of the things that was so eye-opening for me when I went down there is You know, I'm a former educator, and so I'm going to go down to Des Moines. I'm going to change education in the state of Iowa. I'm going to find a blank check, and I'm going to make sure that schools are fully funded and all these different great things. And then you go down there and you're like, oh, we got to fund the prison system. Oh, we got to fund, you know, roads and bridges. And I mean, there's just so many different things that you have to fund, and there's only so many dollars to go around. And every single area wants more. And so it's so overwhelming to tell people no, you know, like, no, we can't get you that funding. I mean, it just, you have to share that pot of money, and everybody wants more. And that is tough. And the other tough thing that you alluded to is that you cannot be an expert on everything down there. You absolutely cannot. And so, actually, I was never on any of the committees that really talked about broadband. I was never in the subcommittees or you know, in those internal meetings. What the information I always got was always kind of like, once a bill was ready for the floor of the House, then you would get some of that information. And even at that, it was very summarized. You know, and for myself, I ended up becoming chairman of the Transportation Committee. And that was a learning curve, you know. It's like, holy cow, all of a sudden now I'm thrown into, you know, infrastructure funding and laws that deal with, you know, safety on the roads and things like that. And,
right, how
and
the then, suburbs interact with Des Moines, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, and so just crazy stuff like that. And actually, the fuel tax consumed most of my life down in Des Moines. That was my bill. That was my initiative. And I was very driven to increase the funding for our roads and bridges infrastructure. And we did get that accomplished. And during that process, you focus in. I mean, that's a big lift to get that done, and it takes a lot of your energy. And so sometimes you maybe don't pay as close attention to some of the other things. But I don't have a personal staff. I think that's the funny thing, is that people think you go down there. And I've had people say, oh, I can't believe you answered your phone yourself. Well, I am it. That's it. You know, even like on the emails, I do all my own emails. Nobody does those for me. There's no form letters. There's no anything. And so, yeah, it takes a lot of energy down there to stay abreast of all the different topics and issues coming through.
Great. Well, this has been a terrific conversation. I really appreciate all of your time and all of the work you've done, both in the legislature and in Osage.
No, I appreciate it.
That was Josh Burns, General Manager of Osage Municipal Utilities in Iowa. Learn more at muninetworks.org, where we're following developments and reporting them to you. Remember, we have transcripts for this and other Community Broadband Bits podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcasts@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. You can follow Chris on Twitter, where his handle is @communitynets. You can also follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter, where the handle is @muninetworks. Subscribe to this podcast and all of the podcasts in the ILSR podcast family on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thank you to Admiral Bob for the song Turbo Tornado, licensed through Creative Commons. And thanks for listening to episode 232 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.